Our next argument this morning is United States against King. Ms. Day.
Good morning, Your Honor. Your Honors, Mr. King raises three arguments on appeal in this case, the first one being a question of the violation of his right to speedy trial under both the Sixth Amendment, the Speedy Trial Act, and also Rule 48B. This is an unusual case because this involves a walkaway, and normally when a person is arrested from walking away from a facility, they are considered to be in recapture status as opposed to having been arrested on the new charge. But what makes this a unique case is the fact that the U.S. Marshals were notified within the statutory time period that the Bureau of Prisons was ceding custody to them, and the Marshal Service agreed essentially and took that custody. They did that, as documented by their actions in February, when the Bureau of Prisons called up and said, hey, we're being billed for housing this gentleman. He's in your custody.
Why do you think, Ms. Day, that Mr. King was capable of having only one status, that is to say the status of somebody being held on the escape charge, when he was plainly also not finished serving his sentence for the drug offense and it would seem also in recapture status? It hardly seems shocking that they didn't want to leave him at this minimum security camp since he had demonstrated a tendency to wander off. So they put him in the Williamson County Jail, and even granting that part of the reason he was in the jail was the escape charge, he had no interest in liberty at all until he finished serving the drug sentence.
He didn't have an interest in liberty, but he did have an interest in certain other rights, including the right to administrative hearing. He did have a right to an administrative hearing within a timely period, which is 3 working days from December the 14th.
Did he ask for any such hearing?
He doesn't have to ask for such a hearing. It's required by law. That hearing, I'm not certain of the date that it occurred. I found out later that it had occurred prior to the indictment, I believe, by about 10 days.
So does the Speedy Trial Act or the Sixth Amendment apply to the BOP's failure to give a hearing within a certain number of days?
No, Your Honor, it does not apply to that. However, I think that it demonstrates the problem in this case, in that the Bureau of Prisons was clearly saying he is not in our custody. They would be required by law to follow certain administrative procedures, which they did not follow.
But we are looking at whether the government violated either the Speedy Trial Act or the Sixth Amendment by delaying the indictment until April. And the fact that somebody was paying, one part of the U.S. government was paying for his incarceration in the county jail versus another part, I just have a lot of trouble, particularly looking at cases like our decision in the United States against Zukowski, in seeing how his rights are implicated at all under those laws.
Your Honor, I agree that there is a strong line of cases that say recapture is something different from a new arrest.
And he has dual capacity. He's both been recaptured and he's now vulnerable to a new charge.
But he is entitled to specific rights, one of which must take priority over the other, dependent upon what his status is at that given time. If he is in recapture status, then the Bureau of Prisons has to follow their procedures. They ceded that status to the Marshal Service, to the United States government, which was acknowledged. That meant then that he was entitled to his initial appearance within 48 hours, and he didn't get an initial appearance for 4 months.
Well, if this applies at all, you're assuming that an escaped prisoner is just the same as a free person, for the same as this, if the BOP has decided to give the Marshals the leading agency role.
No, I don't assume that a person who has walked away from a facility and is taken into custody is the same as a person who commits a new crime. But that person is still entitled to substantial and significant rights. And in this case, I believe the right to speedy trial was implicated. It is not the ordinary walk-away case. It is not the case where the Bureau of Prisons proceeds with their procedures. And the government then is entitled to their 5-year statute of limitations to make a decision about whether or not they wish to pursue the case. This is a situation where the United States government took custody of him separate from the Bureau of Prisons. And that makes a major difference in this particular case.
When you say separate from, are you implying that he wasn't getting credit for his drug sentence while he was in Williamson County Jail?
Your Honor, I am not certain at this point in time of where the credit lies. That's one of the problems that I pointed out. He's going to have issues with regard to that. I have not gotten an update as to how they determined that sentence. But he will get to one sentence or another. Admittedly, he will get credit to one sentence or the other. He raises a second issue, which has to do with the 7-level reduction under the Sentencing Guidelines Section 2P1.1, Subsection B2, for voluntary return within 96 hours of his walk away from the facility. He was found missing during the head count, I believe, at 4:30 in the afternoon. During his testimony, he said that he had walked away from the facility at approximately 10 or 10:30 in the morning. So he was gone for a period of a few hours. The point is that 2P1.1 provides for a reduction in sentence in a situation where a defendant voluntarily returns within 96 hours and has not committed any new criminal conduct beyond the walk away from the facility. In this particular instance, Mr. King testified at trial that, and had been consistent since the day of his arrest, that he had simply gone for a walk in the woods, in his terms, to seek God's face. He was...
But the guard who picked him up had a rather different story, which is the one the district judge chose to believe. So it's hard for me to see, on a clear error standard of review, how we can say the district judge's finding, following the story of the guard who recovered him, that he was trying to conceal himself, that he didn't even know until he approached the car that the guard was from the prison camp, etc. It just strikes me as a factual issue on which the district judge is difficult to overturn.
Your Honor, I agree that there are difficulties with this. I think there are a couple of important points of note. First of all, that a number of these things that the guard remembered were not in any report that was done at the time of the end.
It's a credibility question, though. I mean, the district judge might think now he remembers.
Yes, he might think that now he remembers. Also, the things that he said were absolutely not inconsistent with Mr. King's story, that he got lost in the woods. By the time that he was discovered by the guard, it was dark. He was in an area that he was not familiar with. By his indications, he was lost. He also made an interesting comment during the course of his testimony, and that is, I've been gone for a long time. If I was going away, I would have been a whole lot further, or words to that effect. And that's the reality of the situation.
It's his defense. The district judge concluded that it was his perjury as well. And it's a little strong to say, and that's the reality of the situation, unless you think you have superior knowledge of what was going on at the time.
I don't believe I have superior knowledge. I have the knowledge of what my client testified to at trial
exactly.
And told me during the course of our meetings.
I
agree with
the court found to be perjury.
The court found that it would be perjury.
That it was perjury, not that it would be perjury.
That particular subsection 3C1.1, the obstruction, I do still assert, however, that the court didn't make the necessary and specific findings, and I believe that Mr. Carr conceded that in his brief, that he didn't make the specific findings as to all of the factors, falsity, willfulness, and materiality. And those findings are required, and it stands that he did admit to each and every allegation of the crime charged during the course of his testimony, in addition to the other statements that he made during the course of his testimony. So he made the full admission to the offense in this particular case. I would simply just assert on his behalf that I believe that there was a violation of the speedy trial. I believe that he is entitled to the 7-level reduction for voluntary return. And I think that the Groves case supports that, though it is a not an appellate decision. There's very limited law on this particular issue of the entitlement to the 96 to the 7-level reduction. And again, I also assert that he is entitled to the or not should not have been assessed the 2 levels for obstruction.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Day. Mr. Carr.
May it please the court. The issue is not, as Your Honor has pointed out, what the defendant's version was, because the district court, after the jury took about 10 minutes on the defendant's version, made a finding. And those factual findings, it's my understanding, are what we look at and determine whether or not those were clearly erroneous. Well, the judge's factual findings, besides saying he didn't believe a thing, were that you were leaving, you intended to leave, and I find that you intended to leave. That finding was based upon what the defendant did, and that is, as the guard was driving by, sees him walking, he sees his clothes, he turns around and drives back and sees the defendant hiding behind one of those park service signs. They're on high posts, and you can see the legs right underneath the sign. And he's looking the other way as the guard goes by. Turns around and comes back, and the defendant's still walking in the opposite direction of the institution. And when he engages him in conversation, it's like, do I know you? Do you know me? Where are you going? And before you know it, he's willing to take a ride with somebody that he doesn't know before he's a guard. Now, it's with that backdrop that you look to determine whether or not the judge's findings were clearly erroneous. It took the jury 10 minutes to decide about what was going on, and I respectfully submit that is what happened in terms of whether or not he's voluntarily returning and whether or not he's lying.
It's what the evidence permitted the jury to find. I mean, both of you seem very confident in, you know, that I know what's happening. And our question is simply what did the evidence permit the jury to find? What did the evidence permit the judge to find by a preponderance on the perjury conclusion and so on?
I guess, you know, you're correct, Your Honor, and it has nothing to do with my confidence in it. But I do feel confident that if the court has made a factual finding that we look at those findings and make a determination whether or not those were clearly erroneous. If I could go on to the perjury issue, and counsel's indicated that perhaps the judge or that the government is conceding that there weren't factual findings, I don't think that's really fair. I think what our brief indicated was that there wasn't specificity to those findings, but in general, the court made findings of perjury. He specifically said, I find that you lied. I find that it was material, and said, you did not intend to return. That was the statement. Now, while he may not have gone through the elements of perjury, a perjury requires that there be a false statement under oath, and that it be made willful, and that it be immaterial. The court certainly indicated that he felt like, in terms of the intent, and in this case, the intent for an escape is knowingly doing it, and the judge advised the jury in its instruction that you have to knowingly do that. It was in that context.
Is it material? Suppose everything the defendant said was absolutely true. Would it have been a defense?
I'm not sure if I even understand where you're getting at. I mean, if everything that he said was true,
that he left simply because he preferred to pray off the, you know, off the reservation than on it,
okay.
And he planned to come back, he got lost. All those things were true. Would that be a defense?
It would not be a defense.
Well, if it wouldn't be a defense, why is it material? It's not clear why the district court even allowed the testimony to be given. It amounts, in my ears at least, it's a plea for jury nullification.
Exactly.
Usually judges prohibit that, but jury nullification is not material in the legal sense.
Well, in this case, the jury was instructed, and I do believe that the law requires that the defendant act knowingly. And the defendant, while I certainly do not dispute, that's exactly what happened.
The only thing that has to be knowing is that he knows he's left the prison. He conceded that. He conceded that it was his objective.
I don't think it's easy to say that he's conceding that he knew he was leaving the prison. I think that mixed in with his testimony was that he became lost. Ultimately, I think that he said that he knew but if you look at counsel's opening statement and what he originally was saying in his direct examination, I think that it's pretty apparent that he was trying to make it look like that he wasn't just exactly sure that he was off of the institution, the institution grounds. He knew that he'd passed those white signs that say you cannot go past this, but there was, at the time that he was testifying, an issue about whether or not just simply passing the signs that say do not go beyond was beyond the federal property, and I think that he intended to make that an issue. And mm-hmm. So it's within that regard, I think, that clearly nullification was an issue. Clearly, knowingly is one of those is an element of the offense, and I think that it is material, and that's why the court found that it was perjury. With respect to the speedy trial issue, I don't think that the fact that a guard may have put down in some report that the person has been sent to the Williamson County Jail for purposes of prosecution would trigger the Speedy Trial Act. It may be very well true that that's what they wanted to happen, that that's what they expected to happen. It's also apparent from the record that they intended that he not be kept at that facility because he posed a danger to the minimum security facility. But it, for purposes of the
speedy, he deemed himself lucky that he wasn't just sent indoors.
In looking at the policy considerations behind 3161, I don't need to tell the court, you're obviously familiar with it, but here is a person that's already serving a sentence who has not been charged. The whole idea behind the Speedy Trial Act was to make sure that, number one, somebody's not in jail for a long time, past the time under the Act, and number two, that even if he's not in jail, the protection is for an individual who may be charged and subject to whatever the humiliation or the burden that goes along with those charges. In this instance, he wasn't charged. He already had that Act, so from a policy perspective, 3161 doesn't apply anyway, and of course, Zukowski indicates that a recapture is not an arrest for 3162. So based upon the arguments in our brief and the arguments that I've made here, I respectfully submit that the opinion and the decisions of the district court should be affirmed. Thank you. Is there any questions?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Ms. Day, anything further?
I only have one brief point, and it's simply in response to Mr. Carr's comment that a document reflecting that the U.S. Marshal's Office was notified was not sufficient for the speedy trial issue. But I do want to make clear that the Bureau of Prisons actually called and spoke with Scott Benton, Deputy U.S. Marshal, on December the 17th. And that information was provided to the court prior to its ruling in a supplemental filing. So it's not a matter of just some documentation floating around and nobody's aware. There was actually a phone call made to the United States Marshal's Service.
Mm-hmm.
If you have no further questions, thank you.
Thank you very much. Case taken under advisement. Our final